Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharsky, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. I got Preds tickets to give away, a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Colorado Avalanche at Bridgestone Arena this Saturday night to caller number 5, 615-737-1025. Let's welcome in our buddy Charles Robinson to the program from Yahoo Sports, talking Titans and all things NFL. Charles, good morning. How we doing?
What's going on, gents? We gonna speculate on what Joe's doing?
That's a good question. I don't know. He wouldn't tell me.
On assignment.
On assignment.
The very vague on assignment. He uses it in a way that's disrespectful to journalism, I think.
Such a pretentious phrase. I'm on assignment. Yeah. Okay. Awesome.
I think the assignment requires sleeping in today to get ready the assignment.
Could be. He didn't say what time this assignment was starting. So we'll see. It better be a darn good piece at The Athletic at some point. Better be a darn good piece.
Yeah. It's a lot of expectations on it. See how he performs with expectations.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to start with Seattle coming to town this week. Obviously, a really bad performance. It's still right there with the Rams, despite Darnold's turnover festival. He's done amazing things there. His receiver in Jackson Smith and Jigba is on record pace. Just wondering, how good do you think they are? How legitimate a contender in the NFC?
I mean, I think if the defense plays, you know, the way it's, or, you know, presents the ceiling that they've had, you know, over the course of the season, I think there's any team in the NFC they can beat, frankly. I mean, DeMarcus Lawrence, the Cowboys got to be kicking themselves for letting him go. He's been such a huge piece for them. You know, Leonard Williams, I mean, up and down the roster on defense, they've played, you know, really, really well. Maybe the back end, you know, Reek Woolen obviously has had some issues over the course of the season, but they're talented, they're deep, super aggressive. The coach, you know, the coaching staff, I think fits, you know, the scheme that they run with those guys is perfect. Offensively, yeah, you know, Darnold. Here's the thing with Darnold. Let's wait and see. Last week, to me, it was the Darnold that, you know, we saw late last season. And it was I know Minnesota probably didn't make the right decision here, but it was still the guy that they stared at and said, okay, when we get into these situations where, you know, we have must-win games and this guy gets pressured, what's he going to turn into? Is he going to be the guy who gets to his third read, or is he going to be the guy who does one read and panics or forces balls into bad situations? I still think the jury's out on him. I want to see him through the remainder of the season. Ton of football left to be played. As you said, you know, Jackson Smith and Jigba has been unbelievably productive. You know, there's so many receivers that are kind of like his size and like weight profile that when you talk to guys about drafts now, they kind of are looking for that comparison. Like, who's this guy that maybe we can slide around a little bit, use a lot out of the slot and just feed like crazy. You know, Rashid Shaheed let's wait and see how he adjusts as he goes along, but I still think he was an unbelievably great, you know, deadline pickup. AJ Barner, the tight end's been, they were searching for a tight end for the longest time, and all of a sudden they just stopped. And I think particularly the trade deadline, some teams were surprised because they thought, you know, Seattle would be poking around for a tight end, but, you know, Barner's kind of formed into that role where, he's become a legitimately, you know, top 15, maybe top 10 type tight end moving forward for them. I think the Titans are going to have their hands full. I think this is a really, really good team. And I think defensively, it's the one thing people really need to wake up on with Seattle. I have so much focus on like Darnold and Jackson Smith and Jigba, but I think it's the defense that's going to propel this team. And if they get, you know, if this ends up being, you know, your one seed in the postseason, I can't imagine having to go through Seattle, you know, for all these other NFC teams that have their own flaws. They're set up. It's amazing to me how fast this pivot's kind of happened for them after Pete Carroll went out the door.
Here's another side of this that we talked about a little bit earlier. What's your verdict at this point on Kevin O'Connell? Because with Darnold flowing, Minnesota was awfully good. McCarthy seems, it's early, but right now seems like a miss. Carson Wentz is not the substitute you want. But how much is O'Connell keyed to the quarterbacks, or how much is a quarterback guru failing the young quarterback he helped pick?
I mean, I'll say this. He's in terms of O'Connell, the guys who came into the season with an absolutely sterling reputation, in terms of guys who came in and have taken a ding, he's one. he could do absolutely no wrong. Every guy wanted to play. You know, you read Seth Wickersham's book, American Kings, and it's talking about, you know, Caleb Williams and his dad are trying to figure out a way to get Caleb Williams, you know, there to play for Kevin O'Connell. You know, you see what he did with Darnold, obviously. You had Aaron Rodgers was dying to play for the Minnesota Vikings. It was like everybody wanted to get to O'Connell. And then, you know, he's kind of hit a brick wall, not only with Carson Wentz, but obviously clearly with J.J. McCarthy. You know, I think it's an interesting situation in Minnesota because you always wonder, you're like, okay, well, you know, how are Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and him, you know, Kevin O'Connell, how are they adjusting to each other? Because you've always heard like, hey, it's kind of strange bedfellows, these two guys. They're, you know, O'Connell's super serious driven, like the type that when we all came in covering the league, that whole idea of like, oh, these coaches have beds in their office because they never go home. He's that kind of guy. And, you know, Kwesi's sort of the new echelon of GMs that are, you know, very analytics driven. Their whole life service is not about football. You know, they have other things that they're interested in. And then you have like veteran coaches who always talk about these guys thinking they're the smartest guys in the room. And that's not a compliment. So I wonder with McCarthy, I wonder how this pans out between these two, if McCarthy is a miss, because now you got to fix a mistake that you made. How quickly do you do it this offseason? Do you go, hey, the guy's only had, you know, what, 5 games under his belt. Do we wait another season and go through this again? The problem is you have a veteran roster that wants to win now. And I think you have veterans, honestly, inside the franchise that are like, hey, okay, let's go. We had a setup with a quarterback a year ago, and now we're, you know, it's turned inside out because we're driving everything into this young guy. And I don't want to kill McCarthy yet either. You know, like, let's see. It's a possibility, you know, that the kid turns it around. He has had, obviously, a limited number of starts. I think Kevin's reputation's taken a little bit of a hit. I think there are probably some people in the league that got tired of hearing about how great he was, and they're like, okay, yeah, now let's have that conversation again, because you know, Kevin runs into his struggles with the talent just like anybody else. It's definitely been fascinating. Other than like Chip Kelly being just like an abject disaster with the Raiders, you know, I'd say that Kevin and how McCarthy's developed this season, again, I think that to me is probably one of the more disappointing things that we've seen out of the NFL.
So, Charles, on the Cam Ward front, we taking into context his situation, right? I mean, he's got a horrible roster. He's got almost no help on the offensive side of the ball. They've already fired their coach. We know all these things. He is on pace for a 10-touchdown, 10-interception season, just over 3,300 yards, 58.4% completion percentage. Right now his touchdown percentage is at 1.8. For reference, Matthew Stafford's is at 8 on the dot, which is just an absurdly high number. When you watch Cam Ward, when you talk to people about Cam Ward, what do you see? How much is concern on him? How much of it do you have to factor in the horrible situation that he's in? What comes to mind when you watch Cam Ward?
He gets sacked a lot. I mean, I think that's definitely the – you know, the worry is he getting sacked because of the line's underperformance, or is he going to be a quarterback who takes sacks, right? Like, because if he's a quarterback who takes sacks, it's going to be a problem his entire career. And, you know, when obviously you went into the draft, there was this idea of, like, you know, him trying to hold out for the bigger play, right? Like, oh, he either, you know, plays out of structure or he holds onto the ball for a really long time, kind of hunting, you know, for these big plays. And the worry was, when you get to the NFL level, the athleticism is completely different. You're going to end up suffering a lot of sacks. And, oh, by the way, he's going to play, in, you know, behind an offensive line that has got its problems, you know, particularly, I mean, the tackle problems this year have been, extremely concerning, obviously, because you're like, how do you fix this moving forward if this is the reality of what you're looking at, particularly on the right side, Latham. I mean, I was embarrassed, you know, how many times I came on the show and was like, oh, Latham's this great tackle, and everybody, you know, loved him going to the draft. The Eagles love Latham, and now I'm like, what the heck happened with this?
We are, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, it's, you know, in my mind, you know, and I haven't watched the full suite of the last several games, but I feel like the snippets that I've seen, it seems clearly to me he's been more productive the last two or three games. You know, the completion percentage, I feel like, okay, it's getting better. You know, at times the decision-making process looks better. You know, so I guess my thought process is, is he going to make strides as the season, you know, goes down the avenue to the finish? I mean, that's what, as a Titans fan, I would be looking for. Like, if he can make strides and we go in the offseason on a higher note than obviously the way things started, and then obviously you go out and you search for the right coaching staff for his skill set, it's workable. I am worried about the sacks. Like, are the sacks, and I would ask you guys, do you think the sacks are a function of the line? Do you think it's him and his processing or the way that he approaches it? Is he holding the ball too long, or do you think it's maybe a combination of both? A young guy and, you know, trying to put some things on his shoulders, and that ends up leading to him taking a lot of punishment.
I think it's all of that. I think part of it too is that he drifts.
Yeah.
And so that they don't know exactly where he is. And he drifts unnecessarily into spaces that are more dangerous.
Yeah, that's, you know, obviously there's been a couple of young quarterbacks. I mean, we're going to see Shadur, and Shadur's like, you know, a drift merchant where it's like, hey man, you don't have the pressures, you know, we'll see, you know, how the Browns line holds up, but that has obviously been a knock on Shadur. And I think part of the reason why they've stayed away from even thinking about starting him is this idea that he, you know, can drift himself into pressure, or he moves around when there's not pressure to move away from. Obviously it didn't happen against the Ravens. He had reason to move around, but yeah, I mean, drifting is, but I personally think that also is that's something that's coachable. And I think some guys, as they get, you know, you just get more experience, you get a comfort level with your offensive line, you get some confidence. Maybe that doesn't happen, you know, quite as much, but he can't be a guy. I mean, I don't even know what he's on pace for. It's got to be darn near.
He's on pace for 70 sacks.
50 plus. 70? Is it 70?
He's already at 41. They're on pace for 70 sacks.
Oh, my God. I knew it was a lot. I didn't realize it was 70.
I didn't either. I get numb to it, I guess.
Oh, my God, man. That's crazy. I mean, we're starting to talk. It's like David Carr.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we're going to get to a point where, yeah, that is absolutely unsustainable. He'll break, right? I mean,
he's been incredibly durable. I'll give him that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, he's a tough guy. And that's the thing, too, is who was it that they traded? And I love that he said, I'm trying to think in my mind who made a statement about him going out the door.
Draymond Jones.
That's right. That's who it was. And to me, that means something. Because get guys coming out of a program and they unprompted say, hey, stick with it. Because a dude. Yeah. I'm like, okay, that means something to me. Because a guy doesn't have to say that. The good thing is, it's not like this is just any kind of a total disaster where you're like, oh, there's nothing here to work with. There is. I mean, you see, I mean, Dan Orlovsky says it like every week, like, you know, I watch the film and there's some throws where you're just like, my God, these are amazing. And I see it too. I mean, you definitely see that the talent and the ceiling is still there. But I would say if there's one thing I'm most concerned about, it's just this ability to keep himself from constantly, you know, taking these sacks. Man, 70, I didn't know that. I was thinking like, oh, 50 to 60, but God, 70 is just horrendous.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest for his weekly segment. What do you think, like, if you drew up, what is quote-unquote the right system for Cam Ward?
Man, that's a good question because, I mean, his skill set is – well, okay, so let me ask you this. What do you think of him? Obviously, teams are – I don't want to say it's like the flavor of the month, but what do you think of him running like an RPO system? Everybody wants to shift to more of an RPO system. The quarterback's got the athleticism. Do you like, what would you think of him in that kind
of
system?
He did it well in college.
Yeah.
Right.
There were indications that what they did with him in the offseason or camp with RPOs didn't go so well. But I think that they probably weighted that too heavily or made it, you know, too narrow or said like, all right, we can't do that now.
Right. Okay. Yeah. See, that's what I wonder is the surrounding talent good enough to be able to run, you know, an RPO system with him, you know, is it, or is there some sort of an athleticism cap?
I think he's reluctant to run. Like he ran three times this last game very well, but they said, you know, the way Houston rushes allows room for, well, there's room for quarterback to go get a 6-yard first down a lot of times, whether he's a runner or not. You know, he's athletic.
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely, I mean, he's definitely, it feels like he's been reluctant to run compared. I mean, especially early in the season, I felt like, man, he's not really using his legs at all.
Yeah.
I know he had a couple of, you know, I think he was 2-3 runs against Houston where he was actually productive. I know he had, it was like one, off the top of my head, I remember there was like one long run. And I remember I thought to myself, like, oh, okay. Like that's something that we have not seen. But yeah, I don't, like, to me, I feel like quarterbacks are drafted now or teams are leaning more into, we want a guy who can run an RPO system, but I don't know if you have like the surrounding talent. I still, again, what are you going to do? If let's say right tackle is what it is, right? Or let's just say the tackles are what they are at this point. What do you do? I mean, are you going to move these guys? I mean, especially like Latham. Like, I know there's been talk about like, well, maybe you move them around. Like, okay. Like, I mean, if it's a lot of capital, you know, spent on guard talent. If now you're talking about moving Latham to a guard spot, and you better be rushing for 200 yards a game at that point, right?
Yes.
You got to resolve that. So I don't. I am nervous about, you know, how they're going to fix the offensive line. The same way I feel like I've been nervous about that for several years because it's a difficult thing to fix in the NFL. And when there's even a hint of struggle, you know, things can get shaky really fast. I mean, look at Detroit. I mean, Detroit's offensive line is still, you know, but you swap out a couple pieces and all of a sudden it's like, they've been handled in a couple. I mean, the Packers handled them to open the season. I mean, Philly handled them. I'm looking at Philly's defensive line. I'm like, man, Detroit, all of a sudden you're getting pushed around pretty significantly. Your entire offense gets disrupted. And they have, I mean, that talent is, especially at the tackle spots, you know, your top shelf. It's just a difficult thing to repair. And I just stare at the Titans. I'm like, how are you going to do this? You're going to spend through the nose in free agency? I'd have to look. We know who's, you know, at the tackle spots, who's going to be available in free agency. You know, the draft, all I ever hear now is there's so many, you know, so few guys that come out ready and prepared to play offensive line in the NFL, even, you know, first round picks, it takes time. I'd be praying that Latham
pans out.
I don't know what it would take, but yeah, gets it together, right? Don't you hope that you're like sitting there like, man, that if there's something we want to see down the stretch that's not Cam Ward, it would be nice.
Yep.
If our, you know, seventh overall pick, you know, tackle all of a sudden became what we thought he could be. Do you think, I'm curious about this too, flipping them, you know, I always wonder about teams taking guys to be certain positions and then, you know, all of a sudden they become, you just say, oh, flip them to the right side, you know, he plays on the left side, and you flip them to the right side, or we draft him for the left side and play them on the right side. Do you think that's any impact at all on him? Like some guys, I've had offensive line coaches tell me, hey, man, there's some really good left tackles who just can't do it on the right side for whatever reason. The drop throws them off or, you know, their brain's not wired to play on the right side. They've always played on the left side. you know, and that's where they got to play.
He's the other way around, though. He was a right tackle coming in. The right. switch was to left and back. I just think he's got to get his head right. And I suggested, you know, Borgonzi call him in and say, listen, I don't have that much to sell my new head coach. You need to be part of it. Get it straight these next seven games. I don't have too many pieces to sell the next guy. I can't sell him two guards. I need to sell him a guard and a right tackle. So
yeah, this is really tough to sell another new head coach. Like, hey, yeah, we expended top 10 capital on two guards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they better be like Zach Martin, right?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Let's go to Pittsburgh for a second. I'm friendly with Arthur Smith. I like him a lot. In Atlanta, he didn't get the ball to his weapons. And now Pittsburgh made a distinct decision. You know, George Pickens doesn't fit. Not going to be good with Aaron Rodgers. DK Metcalf will be. And he's got what? What did you say, Robbie?
He's got 37 catches.
37 catches. Why? And I would think Aaron Rodgers would overrule things and force the ball to his best guy. Why can't they get the ball to him?
Well, first and foremost, Pickens, it wasn't like a talent thing, right? Like he was too much of a flake. Like they had to get him out the door because it was just, they felt like there was like no adults in the room. I think part of it for Pittsburgh, at least when you talk to them about what's going on with the offense, they know they lack. I mean, watch how defenses play them. I mean, like they lack an impact beyond Metcalf. I mean, they just don't have a guy who can help to kind of pull coverage. It's just they shopped at the deadline. They looked at all kinds of guys. They've been praying that Roman Wilson, rounds into a decent number two. They just need someone that, you know, takes some attention away from defenses rolling toward DK. I wonder physically, the thing with Rodgers that I think is different now than the one we've seen, he doesn't like to get hit anymore at all. And so everyone's like, oh, he can get the ball out so fast. Yeah. But for Metcalf, granted, you can get him the ball, you know, you can do short area stuff and hope that he breaks it, right? You know, throw some slants or just kind of design some things when you get the right looks and hope that he does the damage for you. But if you want the developing routes, the deep stuff, Rodgers got to hold the ball a little bit. And he just is not – I don't think he's that guy anymore. When I watch Rodgers consistently, I'm like, wow, he looks like a quarterback that doesn't want to get hit anymore at this stage in his career. And maybe it's because of, you know, the health stuff that's happened. Now you see – there's the wrist issue in the non-throwing hand. And I don't know if – I think that they are capped a little bit by the fact that they don't have anybody other than DK in terms of that kind of, like, take the top off of a defense guy. And so you can roll safeties toward him. You can give him double coverage. And then there's just not a lot of other options that you're scared of. And then I also think, again, the deeper stuff, I just don't see this being the Rodgers that we've seen in the past who can move around enough to really let things develop if it has to be that way, or B, okay, I'm going to be comfortable in the pocket. I'm going to go ahead and sit here and let routes completely unfold to the point where, you know, I can throw a deeper ball and be comfortable. I don't think he's comfortable like that anymore. So I think they've been a little bit strapped by just the talent deficit that they have not been able to resolve, and everyone's seen them try repeatedly 2 years running at the deadline to try and, you know, add a second wide receiver, and then, you know, Rodgers limitations.
All right, Charles, we got about a minute. Your concern level with the Kansas City Chiefs, who now found themselves at 5-5 with a huge game against Indy coming up this weekend.
I mean, Indy, Dallas, you got to play the Chargers, you got to play Denver down the stretch. I mean, even Houston, I mean, at least Houston got defense, right? So they're a threat. Yeah, it's concerning, man. 5-5, definitely. I think there's – I was looking at some, you know, just different people who offer different percentages, but they lose this week against Indy. Like, the playoff odds go from, like, in the 60% if they win to, like, low to mid-30s if they lose. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of concern there. Plus, you know, now you got Andy Reid talking about, yeah, I'm sending in runs, but, you know, they're turning into passes.
Yeah.
That's kind of pointing a finger at Mahomes changing things in that RPO scheme. I think they're at 9 RPOs against Denver. 8 of them ended up being passes. And everybody know, I mean, if you watch football long enough, you know, hey, I can throw a bunch of RPOs. We'll get 4 or 5 yard gains throwing the ball. Does not take the same toll on a defense if you're running instead of throwing to get those 4 or 5 yards. By the fourth quarter, if you've been throwing on RPOs constantly, or, I mean, a steady diet of it anyway, the defense is not going to be as worn down in the fourth quarter as if you're running. Like, there's a difference between a 4-yard run and a pass, you know, a quick pass that gets you 4 yards. Does not take the same toll on a defense over the expanse of a game, and I think that matters. Plus, they're deep. I'll say this too about the Chiefs. Defensively up front, like, I've never seen Chris Jones get pushed around as much as I have this season. Yep. I mean, there's been some games where I'm just like, whoa, what has happened to this guy in terms of run defense? It's, you know, so they've got concern with definitely some of their cornerstone pieces and then also what they're doing schematically.
Charles, awesome stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us today, and we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Take care, guys.
Take care, bud.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Outstanding stuff every week at 8 o'clock with us on Thursday morning. We'll react to what Charles had to say there. I got a lot more coming your way. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. If you're looking for a great spot to pregame before the Titans game at Nissan Stadium this Sunday, stop by John Bon Jovi's pregame with 102.5 The Game. JBJ's has the best food on Broadway, cold beer, and cocktails. Stunning skyline views, including two epic rooftops. Pregame show brought to you by Parman Tractor and Equipment and Circa Sportsbook Kentucky. Appreciate Charles Robinson for being with us in the last segment. Massive game this weekend in the NFL. PK, Chiefs-Colts, Chiefs at home. I believe they're a 3.5-point favorite.
Yeah.
5-5 on the year. And as Charles brought up, you've got another game against the Chargers. You've got another game against the Broncos.
Got the Titans on the schedule.
A lot of things coming up here for the Chiefs, but 5-5 and finding themselves in danger, at least, of not even making the playoffs in the AFC.
Join me, America, and Titans fans. It's a week to root for the Colts. Let's end this Kansas City
thing. I agree.
I mean, how great would it be if they're not even in the playoffs?
Be awesome.
I think maybe some people think, well, I want to see Mahomes in the playoffs. It, you know, the show that's on before us was talking about what AFC quarterbacks do you trust in the playoffs? That's the issue with these emergent teams, right? Do you trust Daniel Jones in the playoffs? Well, no. But, I mean, he's been there maybe once, right?
Yep.
He's got to get there and have a chance before you're guaranteeing failure. I can't believe I'm saying that, though, right? I have no faith in Daniel Jones in the playoffs.
Well, like,
there's no reason to have faith in Daniel Jones.
They're also talking
about
Josh Allen. Like, Josh Allen, for the most part, has played pretty
well. Well, Josh Allen's
going
to be fine in the playoffs, like, right? And but Buffalo has given you reasons to lose faith because they don't defend well, and they're just too inconsistent now.
Yes.
They're not going to have the number one seed, so they're going to have to win three times, and they're going to have to win on the road. That's a tough bet to bet on the Bills right now. The AFC is absolutely wide open. I'm not a believer in Denver, but do you believe in Bo Nix in the playoffs? I mean, it's unfair to say outright. I mean, maybe unfair is the wrong word.
Yeah.
Bo Nix hasn't been in the playoffs. All these young quarterbacks who wind up being good have to start somewhere. But I'm not a Bo Nix guy. I think they've done some winning despite Bo Nix, right? They're a well-built football team, but they're 8-2, right?
Yep. They're not.
I don't love them in the playoffs. I don't love Daniel Jones in the playoffs. Drake May's been the most consistent, maybe, out of those young quarterbacks. They're the most quarterback-centric team, right? Who are you taking out of the young quarterbacks in the playoffs? I mean, New England probably has the worst roster of those teams and maybe the best coach. I don't know. Steichen's pretty damn coach, and Peyton's pretty damn good coach.
Yep.
I shouldn't say that so loosely. So, but Drake May, I like better than I like Nix or Daniel Jones. So what I'm getting at there is AFC playoffs are loaded with uncertain quarterback future. And if you could get Mahomes the hell out of there, well somebody's going to emerge.
Right here are the and this is going to change, I think. But right now, these are the 7 playoff teams in the AFC.
Yeah, hit it. Let's talk quarterbacks as we
Denver go. Is the one seed.
All right, I don't like Nix at all. How about you?
Every time I've watched him play this year, with the exception of last week, I was like, oh, I don't know, man. Last week he was really good. Yeah. So
he's got it in him.
Yeah. He's been up and down. Yeah, he's been up and down, yeah.
New England is at number two with Drake May. Who
I think he's pretty damn
pretty darn good. Indy is number three with Daniel Jones.
Look, it's all about the system, but I think you put some heavy pressure, not just pass rush pressure.
Yeah.
I mean, game situation pressure. I don't have a lot of faith in Daniel Jones.
Pittsburgh is at four with Aaron Rodgers, but
so
they are
limited.
Way up and down.
And he's so limited.
Yep.
And Josh, now the wrist.
Yeah. Josh Allen at five with Buffalo. We know what he is.
Number one.
The Chargers are six with Justin Herbert, who is a great player, but he's never done anything in the playoffs.
He's super due.
Jacksonville is number seven. Yeah. Those are your seven playoff teams right now in the AFC. Now, Kansas City's right there. I tell you, the team that looks like they're starting to come on, which could be end up being the scariest one of all of them, is Baltimore. Like, if Baltimore gets in, they started 1-5. Now they're all the way back up to 5-5.
What's his health?
They very well could go on and win the division.
It keeps showing up on the injury report.
With different stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With ankle this time. Yeah.
I don't trust his health. But let's look at who's in. I mean, Knicks, May, Jones, Rodgers, Allen, Herbert, Lawrence. Allen's number one unquestionably.
Yeah.
Who do you take second on that list? I take Herbert because he's suffered some lumps. You know, he's the one guy on there that's been through some stuff. I'm throwing away Rodgers because he's washed up. Trevor Lawrence has had his chances and hasn't.
I might take May number two on the list.
May's third at worst.
Yeah. I mean, and
somebody's emerging and going to the AFC Championship new.
Yeah.
And fresh, which I think is great.
I do too. Yeah. I think it's awesome.
But also, one of those guys is going to go into playoffs and absolutely tank. Bo Nix. Or Daniel Jones, May,
yeah.
a candidate. One of those three guys is going to go into playoffs, be one and done, and look like crap.
Yeah, no,
right?
Absolutely. Well, and by the way, here's another part of this. I mean, right now Denver's got home field, and that could be an interesting home field. If it's not going to be them at this point, it looks like it's going to be New England. You can talk about New England home field advantage in the playoffs. It can get cold up there, as Titans fans are well aware.
Look, any of these fan bases, the re-emergent teams, Broncos, New England, Colts, will be sick. Maybe I'm just overscoring New England. But for that team to have been a dynasty and then disappeared, I mean, and I'm paying maybe closer attention to them. I just think that place to get back here and with some joy instead of some the misery that went with it with Belichick.
Yep.
I think it's at a different level of New England will just go insane. The region.
Yeah. No, I totally
just
agree.
Blow the roof. There's no roof on the place. But
I mean, it's also like – if you're right now looking at this field, it's like if you're Buffalo and this isn't your year, if Kansas City's not in there, when is your year?
Yeah, well, it's the wrong year for Buffalo to be down.
I know. Like
they've blown it.
They've had a couple of horrible losses. Their defense right now is just not very good. Now maybe that changes when the playoffs come, I don't know. But like it feels like if you're can you imagine if Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen finally don't have to deal with Mahomes in the playoffs
and
they still can't break through.
And the thing, you know, Ravens have been beat up. Yeah, you're right. It's the wrong year to have an off year for those two teams, and they're both having it much more dramatically in Baltimore. But I think when Buffalo lost Oliver, it was crazy for me for them not to make a move. Now, they're not getting Quinn and Williams.
Yeah, the Jets aren't doing that. Yeah.
The Jets aren't doing it. But they needed to do something.
I thought they'd call the Titans. And maybe they did. Maybe they did call the Titans. But it's clear Borgonzi did not want to do that. So,
yeah. They made a mistake. We should go through the NFC this way, too. You've got some more reliable quarterbacks.
Yep.
And I'm thinking Matthew Stafford right off the top of my head.
Yep, we'll do that coming up next. Also, a thought I want to get to on the Colts front as well. We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Paul Kuharski with me on the program. We just ran through the AFC. Let's quickly go NFC, who's in the playoffs right now.
Yeah.
All right, 1-7. Philly at 1. Rams at number 2. At the moment, Chicago at 3. Tampa Bay 4. Seattle at 5, Green Bay 6, and San Francisco holding the 7 spot right now. You got the Lions and the Panthers right behind all those teams.
It's a pretty good field.
I think it's particularly from a quarterback standpoint, it's a lot more proven than the AFC part of it. Let's put it that way. I mean, Baker at this point has played 3 really good years in a row at Tampa Bay. So yeah, I think he just kind of is what he is.
I'm a total Baker believer. Yeah. I picked Tampa Bay to go to the Super Bowl. I think the thing that holds Tampa Bay back to me is Bowles. I mean, I'm not a believer in the head coach. But I mean, I think San Francisco's done a hell of a job holding it together with injuries there. And if they wind up healthy at the end, they're a dangerous team.
Yep.
as the 7th seed. Packers, we know what they'll do with the low seed. They'll be in and out, right?
Unfortunately.
You expect the regular. I mean, Philadelphia, for all of their troubles, they score a touchdown 3 out of 4 times they're in the red zone.
Yeah.
That solves a lot of issues.
They, as we've figured out the last 2 weeks, they've probably, when push comes to shove, got the best defense in the NFL. I mean, they just
– and they know how to win.
Yeah.
But the odds of a repeat are low. So, I look at that, and I'm not sold on Chicago. There's a quarterback that is in the situation that we're talking about. You know, what are the odds that Caleb Williams goes into the playoffs and – does big things first time through.
I think they're about to be in for a rude awakening with their schedule, but we'll see what happens on that front.
Could sink. That division's got a lot to sort out still. And Darnold in the playoffs,
it's a big question.
How much has he done and how much can he do? But Hurts, Stafford, Mayfield, what's he done in the playoffs, really?
Not a ton, but
he's been there.
He's been there.
Been there a lot, taking some lumps. But a definite advantage – Hurts, Stafford, and Purdy, if he's healthy.
Yep.
I like San Francisco. That's a strong field.
Well, if San Francisco and Detroit flip-flop, you've got Goff, who's been in the playoffs a ton too. So there's a lot there from that standpoint.
Maybe the Lions and the Packers flip-flop.
Yep, maybe so. Let's head back to our phone line. Welcome in Trey to the program. Trey, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning, guys. How y'all doing?
What's up?
Good. There's been a lot of consideration about your top half of the lower third.
You know why I say that? Because I broke it down into 3 sections. So the top half of the bottom third will be probably around the 17th, probably around 15 to 17.
No. I don't think that's adding up, Trey.
It's really more like 23rd if you break down the math.
Well, hey, that's still bad though, right?
That's not good. Not what you're looking for.
Hey, Paul, but I just want to reiterate something that you said, that it's kind of, as far as it's all in Cam Ward head, I think Cam Ward does have the ability to be a good quarterback. It's just all in his head. Whatever he learned in college, he needs to leave that there, because this is a different world. You're talking about grown men out there looking to knock your block off. You need to do something better than what you have been doing. Am I going to give him a chance? I don't know. I'll have to see what Shedeur Sanders do in his first.
And by see, you mean here. You'll be listening to Shedeur Sanders play?
I will be listening to Shedeur Sanders, because I love listening to the radio.
Okay. I have one more very important question. A lot of people were also confused about your 600 hours. Tell us about what you meant about the 600 hours.
Yes.
Okay. They played 9 games, right?
10 to the
10. They played
10 games. Each game is 60 minutes, right? That's 600. That's 600 of
minutes.
600
minutes.
Hours of game play.
All right.
which means he's only did 1 touchdown in 100 hours of football.
Okay.
So
we've got it. Mr. Paul.
Thank you very much.
I didn't run your blood pressure up today, so I'm happy.
No, I'm good.
Oh, we're solid.
I'm excited, Mike.
Thank you,
Trey. Blood pressure's good. So
I
we've got
y'all. Y'all
thank
have
you.
A good day.
We love you. We love you. This was fantastic. We learned more. Each time we uncover another layer of the onion. And what we got now is some computational problems between minutes and hours. So 10 games at 60 minutes equals 600 hours. There's more shirt possibilities. We could do a front
longest
of the shirt
season in Titans history. Like 600 hours.
Good grief. You imagine 600 hours of this football
like,
team?
It feels like 600 effing hours. The front of the shirt could be the top third of the bottom half, and the back of the shirt could be 10 games of 60 minutes is 600 hours. Yeah.
Top half of the bottom third, which, by the way, is not the 15th best quarterback in the league. 20, that would be
half.
Like the exact
23rd-ish.
Half. Yeah, 23rd-ish,
24th.
Somewhere in that range.
But, I mean, if we could get him on for – I would do a 15 to 20-minute pod with him just working through some calculations. I think it would hit.
Math on air is always very dangerous.
Yeah, it is.
I know, and I'm not good at math.
Cam?
Yeah, I mean, he had me for a minute with the hours.
600 hours. Yeah. Put him in.
I got him in. And then we could get him involved in the 10,000-hour Malcolm Gladwell thing and see where he plugs into that.
PK, thank you for being
with
me.
We're going out the door having learned a lot. Don't block the box. Be sure to lock your locks. Thank you for having me.
Next man up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.